This is the very first edition of Ask Nikki here on eRadio, and we are talking about desire, navigating desire, understanding spontaneous and responsive desire. And joining us for this discussion is professional sex coach Nikki Brivik from Ask Nikki. Nikki, first of all, a very good evening to you and welcome.
Hi, good evening, Ian. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you on the show just before the love songs. Nikki, just before we get started, tell us a bit more about yourself. How did you end up being a professional sex coach?
You mean how did I end up talking about sex all day for a living?
Yes.
How lucky am I?
Yeah.
I spend my day talking about how to give and receive pleasure. And actually, it's quite an interesting move. I was an attorney. Well, I am an attorney. I suppose you always are one. And I started my own practice. And after about 20 years, I found myself in a position of always giving advice about sex. Not at work, but I've just kind of, it found me. Mm. And I realized that I've got this real passion to kind of liberate that conversation around sex, to allow people to reach their own pleasure potentials, because there's so much shame that people lug around about sex, and people find it so difficult to talk about sex. And as a result, there's so many kind of myths that we have around that kind of surround our sex lives, and there's no place to talk about sex or share ideas or learn how to do things. Effectively, mm-hmm. we learn how to have sex when we're young, and then we never upskill ourselves. And there's no one to go to. So I kind of realized that there was this massive need. And I ended up leaving the my law firm in the capable hands of my husband, who still runs our firm. And I started kind of trying to provide a safe space for people to be able to talk about sex and to learn about sex and to be able to overcome any erotic barriers that so many of us carry around with us. And provide a safe space and a positive sex positive environment that people can reach their kind of pleasure potential and find what is good for them. So that's kind of how I ended up talking about sex.
Wow. Okay. So they come to you. They come and see you, like in a professional setting, or how do you help them? Is it with words, yes, or do you actually show them stuff?
No, I don't show them stuff. Okay. It's all words. I'm a coach. So I use the modality of coaching, which is obviously, I love it because it is goal orientated. It's forward looking. It's fast paced. So it's kind of, where are you now and where do you want to be? Mm. So that's kind of how you come to me. And I generally see individuals and couples. Often it's one of the couple that will come and see me first. And then they've been told that it's their problem, that they have this problem. People think that they have something wrong, when in fact, the more I do it, the more I realize most of us don't have it. There's nothing wrong with our sex lives. It's that we haven't really explored what there is. And we have dull and repetitive sex lives, and no way in learning how to expand and explore what is. So there's such a lack of sex education all over. And we have all these cultural inhibitions, social, religious, things that we learn from our family. And then what happens is, We told don't have sex, and then until you're married. Then when you're married, you must switch a light switch, and suddenly you must be amazing in the bedroom. Mm. And in fact, it doesn't work that way. So people come to me, and I help them overcome what erotic barriers that are holding them back. And the funny thing is that I find that often, even after the first session, people feel so liberated because it's a little bit of sex education, learning how to communicate, and bringing creativity into this area, because creativity in the bedroom is so rewarding, and yet it's somewhere where we we never actually do that. We have a growth mindset when it comes to so many aspects, but not when it comes to sex. And that's kind of what I want. I want people to have a sexual growth mindset so that you can really explore what your body can do and what your body can and how you can share that with your partner.
Mm. That's a very good answer that you have there, Nikki. So obviously anything but vanilla in the bedroom, because that's so boring.
Well, I don't know. There, you see, I'm going to stop you there, because vanilla, if that's your thing, is not boring. Mm. But the thing is that it's the repetitive same vanilla. So you could like certain kinds of sex, vanilla sex, as you call it, but that's fine. But it's how do you go about doing that? How do you change things up? How do you shake it up that it's not the same kind of vanilla every day? Because no one wants to be having the same meal for every single meal, breakfast, lunch, and supper. It's how you can change it up. So it's not that everyone wants to be kinky or everyone wants to add complete differences. That's kind of where my expertise comes in. I can tap into what it is that would make your sex life amazing and help you get there. Because what's great for you doesn't necessarily mean what's going to be great for me.
Mm. On our topic for this episode, can you explain the difference between spontaneous desire and responsive desire, and also why it's important for individuals and couples to understand these concepts?
Yeah, so thank you for that. I think this is such an important topic, because for me it is the root of understanding sometimes why your partner doesn't want to have sex or why they never initiate. And there's so many problems that come from a discrepancy in desire. That's probably what I see people the most about, people having a discrepancy in desire. The one partner really wants to have sex more often. The other partner can often say, I don't want to have sex, or I never really want to have sex. So I see that so often in couples. It usually is along the lines, gender lines. It's more the man who wants to have sex, and the woman doesn't necessarily want to have sex much. And that's kind of how but it does often happen the other way around too. And I just feel that so many issues around this would be avoided if people actually understood the difference between spontaneous and responsive desire. So desire is, we all have our own desire framework. And those who have a spontaneous desire framework, they feel desire very easily. So they metabolize arousal easily. They basically see something and it makes them hot. It's the kind of desire that's depicted in movies. It's like a craving. So I like to say it's like a frying pan. So if this is you and you see your partner, they get out the shower, or you think about something, or you think about last night, or you see something on TV that turns you on and you immediately think, whoa, I'm hot, then you are someone who has spontaneous desire. And and often along gender lines, that is the man. So you are more like a frying pan. But there are some people who experience responsive desire, and they need more space and time to metabolize sexual cues. So it doesn't mean they're less sexual. It just means they require more to get them going. And context is very important. So whilst your partner might be a frying pan, you are more like an oven. And it requires you to turn up that knob on the oven to get yourself heated up. And I sometimes use the analogy putting cold water onto an oven, onto a stove, sorry. You put a pot onto the stove and you have to warm that cold water up. You can make it hot quicker by putting the lid on. You could put it on gas as opposed to electricity. You could maybe put salt in it, but you still need to heat it up. And whereas the frying pan is hot very quickly, that water needs to be boiled. And if you are the person in the partnership that has responsive desire, who's that cold water on a cold, cold stove that maybe is even in load shedding, it takes time to build that heat up. And that's where we often get these problems with partners, because your partner might come home and say, oh my God, I'm dying to have sex with you tonight. And there he comes home to his wife, typically say, and she's had lift schemes all day. She's worked. She's had to do the cooking. She's had to do the cleaning. She's had, the tuck shop and the PTA. And now she's got to suddenly be thinking about sex. And that pot is cold, freezing cold.
Mm.
So it doesn't mean she can't get hot. It just means it's going to take more to get her around. So how can you turn that heat up to get that responsive partner to be hot? Because once that pot is boiling, it's just as hot as the frying pan. So as long as you can get that pot boiling, you can have great, unbelievable sex. It's just knowing how to get your partner going effectively. And I'm hoping some of, your listeners listening to this will be thinking, oh, well, actually, that's me. I understand that. I didn't realize that. So it's not that the responsive desire partner has a problem or that they have a low libido. They can get hot and they can get very hot. It's just a question of that they need a longer arousal runway. So whereas the one might be a helicopter, you might be a 747 that needs that long arousal runway.
Yeah, I like that. That's a nice way to put it. Nikki, how would you say does societal pressure and cultural norms influence our understanding and expectations of desire within relationships? And also, how can individuals challenge these norms to create a more open and inclusive dialogue about desire?
Okay, so, well, I think the thing is that culturally and socially, we kind of expect people to feel hot all the time. You know, the spontaneous desire people are kind of how we think of desire, because it's what you see in the media and, you know, in when you're watching TV, they're having fast, fabulous sex up against the wall after 5 minutes of seeing each other. And in reality, that doesn't happen. Certainly in long-term relationships, the neurochemicals that are kind of firing at the beginning of a relationship fade and reality sets in. And just like anything in life, we need to work at it. We need to work at our desire. So for some, even the spontaneous desire person, they require a trigger, but it's a less of a trigger than the responsive desire person. So it's if you understand it and know about it, you can tap into that and work with it. So I think with regards to society, instead of kind of shaming often women for not being ready for it all the time, we need to accept that sometimes it will take more to get the other person going, and therefore foreplay is basically, well, I don't even like to use the word foreplay because sex should include everything. But we do call foreplay, we do use the word foreplay, and foreplay should be a requirement. It's not a suggestion, because for women or responsive desire people, they need that to heat up their pot. And so I think that's where the focus needs to be, is on focusing on how to create desire, how not that desire shouldn't just pop out of nowhere, that we need to build desire, that we need to become artisans and create passion out of with our tools of our hands and our mouths and sex toys and our brains.
Okay, so obviously communication is incredibly important, Nikki. How can couples effectively communicate their needs and preferences to enhance that intimacy and connection?
Okay, so communication is essential. And that's where I find so many couples fall down, is that people are more likely to have sex than to talk about sex. It's the weirdest thing. It's almost like we kind of meet our partners and we never talk about sex again. So that it's so essential because communication allows us to tell our partner what we want, what we like, how we like to be touched, and also to get what we need. So we need to learn to be able to share in this way. And the problem is, I find, is that people find sexual communication so incredibly difficult. I don't know why, but we take it so personally when we see everything as criticism. If you say to your partner, I don't really like that, or I prefer this, or, you know, it's often taken as criticism, and that leads to obviously a breakdown in a relationship. And I always say that we need to develop a tougher skin. We need to be able to hear that this, we don't like it here, we like it less there, because especially with women, our bodies are a mystery even to ourselves. And we like different kinds of touch according to where we are in our arousal arc, where we are in our menstrual cycle, or whether we're in menopause, or what kind of a day we've had, or how aroused we are. So we change so much. A man is less changeable, but even he changes according to where he likes to be touched as he ages, how hard he likes to be touched, how much pressure he likes. So we need to be able to share our truth with our partners, and in a way that is heard and not taken so personally. So I often say, first of all, in the bedroom is a great place to be a drama queen, because moaning and sighing is a good way to kind of indicate what you like and if your partner is doing well. And criticism is not best in the bedroom, because it obviously kind of ruins all those happy hormones that we're getting. So if you do want to kind of ask for something different, it's best to kind of do it out of the bedroom, and obviously in a very careful way. So I often say kind of do it when you're walking or driving. And you know, the compliment sandwich is a great way. You know, I really liked it last night when you did that and that. But next time, perhaps we can try such and such, or perhaps you can go a little softer or a little lighter. So kind of find your way into communicating. And just remember, if your partner said, can you add salt to the meal that you cooked? Do you take it personally? Mm. Or that, I think we just need to develop a tougher skin, learn better ways of communicating. And it is difficult, but the more we do it, and the rewards that we get from it, the better it will be for everybody in the relationship, and for yourself.
Nikki, any specific techniques or exercises that couples can practice to cultivate desire and keep that spark alive in their relationship?
So I think the thing is, we also have our own individual breaks and accelerators. So the breaks are kind of the things that will hold you back from takeoff. And obviously the accelerator is the stimulation that you get. So it's very important to think about what are your own breaks and your own accelerators when you are thinking about desire. Because obviously the more acceleration you've got, the hotter you're going to get, the quicker you're going to get. Whereas if your foot is on that brake, you know that you're never going to move. So how can you alleviate that? And I think that's something that partners can do for each other. First of all, it's a fun thing to do, is write down your own accelerators and brakes, so you know what they are and you can add or detract from them, because these change as time goes on. And share that with your partner. And then you can see how you can help your partner lift their foot off the brake and put the pressure down on the accelerator. So I'll give you an example. A lot of turn-ons for accelerators are your attraction to your partner, fantasy, a memory of hot sex or being touched in the right places, a particular sexual behavior that you like, maybe underwear or role play. You think about, were those exciters present when you had sex last? And if not, how can you add them in? And then your breaks are things that sometimes you'll be surprised of, feeling exhausted, overwhelmed, feeling too full after eating, angry with your partner or anxious about any aspect of sex. So if you think about that, were those present the last time you had sex? And if so, how can you minimize or remove them? So sometimes, for example, I'll have a client and they'll say, my wife never wants to have sex. And I'll say, well, what about, how can you alleviate some of the stress that she has got on her? And it's so weird, you know, just sometimes putting the kids to sleep can be really hot for the partner who's now given a bit of time to instead go and have a bath or have their own time to kind of get into their bodies, and that can take their foot off the brake. So it can be as simple as that. And, you know, they've even done studies, it's quite funny, that men who help with the housework get more sex.
There you go, guys.
And you can understand it because there's more space for their partner to get into the mind space of having sex, which requires us to be present, because great sex requires presence and being in your body and being mindful. And it's hard to do that when you've got this list of things that you need to do. So when you were asking me, how can partners help each other with these things, share. You know, when you come home and you really want to have sex, share with your partner, you know, oh, do you think, how are you feeling? How can I get you more in the mood? Especially if you have a partner that has responsive desire, ask them, how can I help you get into the mood? And also, I think we need to take some responsibility for our own pleasure. You can't expect your partner to always be the one to get you into the right phase, because it's not fair. You need to take some of that control. So what can turn you on? You know, sometimes I say, read something hot that makes you hot before your partner gets home if you want to initiate sex or you want to be hot for when they arrive home, if you are a responsive partner. Or do something, have a girl's night out so that you are more in the mood, that you've remembered what you're like as a separate person. Because remember, desire likes oxygen to breathe. It requires a little bit of distance, and love is actually the opposite. We kind of almost, I always say, love is like tracksuit pants, and that's not very sexy, you know. You kind of want to know everything about your partner. So how can you fuel desire? Sometimes you need a little bit of distance.
Yeah, so true. Nikki, in your experience as a sex coach, what are some common challenges that individuals face when navigating desire in their relationships? And also, how do you support them in overcoming these challenges?
So I think I've kind of spoken to that. It's knowing what kind of framework you and your partner are in. Because, for example, if you both have responsive desire, you may never want to have sex. Because if neither of you are working at it, or it's never present in your mind, you may never want to have sex. Now, that's okay to you. That's okay. But what normally happens is you have two people who have different desire frameworks. So the one really wants to have sex more often. They have spontaneous desire, and the other one needs to be worked into it. And that can create the problem. So I think it's just knowing what your frameworks are, how you can work towards getting what you want from that. And again, down to communication. Is sex important to you? If it is, how can you prioritize it in your relationship? How do you make it work? And knowing what your desire framework is one step towards that, to having a successful sex life, because you're kind of learning what makes you and your partner tick and how you can kind of activate desire when you want to.
Exactly. Nikki, that was very, very informative. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing your advice. How do we get in touch with you?
So I'm on all social media platforms. My brand is Ask Nikki, but on Instagram, I'm ask.nikki, N-I-C-K-I. So follow me and share with your friends, and I love to hear from you all. And I do lots of talks and workshops, so there's always help out there and lots of fun to be had.
And then next week, Nikki will be talking about Hot and Unbothered, How to Have the Sex You Always Wanted. That's coming up next Wednesday evening at 10 p.m. right here on eRadio. Nikki, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Ian. Speak to you next week.